The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. This is episode 397 to be broadcast on Wednesday, May 29th, 2024 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's out running errands. It's Memorial Day. You know, things are all messed up as far as our schedules go. So that's what we got going on here today. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can make comments right down here below. I may or may not be able to get back to you. Or you can just send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Rant of the week. Not really a rant, but ciao, alla prossima. That's it. 2024 Giro d'Italia. Not a rant, just a fond farewell. Oh man, the Giro's over. Oh, what a great race. What a great race. Good stuff, man. It was an amazing race. It was a well-dominated race, no question about that. And we'll talk about that a little bit more into the show as we get deeper into our show here today. But it was truly an epic event, epic weather, epic conditions, just crazy crashes, all sorts of weird things happening at weird times. All very, very interesting, making this year's Giro, once again, another classic. And to add on to that, another classic part of it, the fastest Giro in history. Fastest, right? They were averaging 26 miles per hour. That's insane. Anyway, there's a couple of reasons for that, but, you know, we'll just kind of go around that and we'll move on to the rest of the show. On the positive side, May is still bike month. Yeah, it's still bike month. It's still happening. So, you know, you can still do like celebratory bicycle related events. You can still do things like that. And then, of course, June, which is right around the corner, right after this show is broadcast, you will have June, and June will be Heart Month. Yes. Another classic milestone here that I like to talk about on the show due to my particular heart situation and a lot of other listeners that I have now who are listening who have experienced heart issues and are still riding their bikes and also claiming, like I do, that the bicycle is truly the answer to saving my life. It has made a big, big difference. So anyway, we'll get on to that. We'll discuss that a little bit later on in the show. Let's see what else here. Have you ridden your bike to work yet? Have you done it? You know, I mean, it was actually on Friday, May 17th, 2024. That was the original bike to work day. But it doesn't mean that you don't have to, you know, just you only have to do it on that day. You could do it on any day. Ride your bike to work. Park your car for the day. You know, as I say at the end of the show, every show I always say, just take that chance and park the car for one day and see if you can get around just on the bicycle. I'll bet you can. That's my wager out to you. So give it a shot, see what you can do. And when you do, I would love to have you report back to me and tell me about what happened on your particular day and what kind of errands you ran. And, you know, it's all a good thing. It's all very positive stuff. The Giro is over. Yeah, we talked about that. So from yesterday's Bicycle Talk Facebook page teaser, I put out the Roman numeral 6, and then following that, 956. I did get one person, Jim Neal, a guy that I graduated from high school with, believe it or not, who figured out at least the 956 part. Yeah, okay, so I'm gonna, we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later on, but congratulations to Jim for figuring that out. He's the first one to figure it out. That's a cool thing. Another thing on the positive side, we bicycles on Main in Wethersfield. If you haven't seen it yet, it's almost gone. So it goes on through the month of May. It certainly is well worth checking out. It's such a cool thing. And yeah, I'm wearing a Best Buddies shirt. Yes, I am. This is actually a Domestique jersey, of which I will be wearing again this weekend coming up. The we get together on Friday evening, the 31st, and on June 1st, we will be proceeding from the Kennedy Library in Boston, which is where the ride actually starts, and that is the beginning of the 100-mile ride. I will not be doing the 100-mile ride. I'll be doing a 20-mile ride, which is from the very last rest stop until we get to Craigville Beach at the end, where the big celebration is. And I will be captaining a tandem again this year, or as we call it, our pilot program. I will be piloting a tandem, and on the back of my tandem will be my best buddy Gabe again for the second year, which is really cool, really exciting. You can see more information about that on the Facebook page, and that will give you an idea if you care to contribute to the cause. It's always greatly appreciated. There is a donation click on there if you want to do that. That is entirely up to you. It's a cool event. It was originally put together by Anthony Shriver. I think he's still very involved in it. And it's just a wonderful event to help raise money for folks that have kids with special needs, and or people in their families with special needs. It's just a cool event, and I can't wait to do it again because it was probably one of my highlights of last year. It was really kind of a cool ride, the coolest 20 miles I've ever ridden on my bike. So anyway, looking forward to that. That's coming up, and of course I'll have more of this in the show. But yeah, this is my Domestique shirt right here. All of us who actually help out with the ride, we all wear these particular jerseys. So pretty cool. Okay. Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. How to find hills near you to better your climbing skills and fitness. Yeah, that's a good one. So, you know, wherever you go, whatever you do, you seem to run into hills. They're all over the place. And climbing hill isn't just about mind over matter. It's about physical strength and learning to work the gears on your bike. This is coming from an article from Bicycling Magazine, which this is from Monique Lebrun. This is all good stuff. It's just generally information that a lot of people probably already have listened to the show, but then I do get a lot of new listeners that come into Bicycle Talk. And when the new listeners come in, I like to inform them about some of the things you can do to learn how to conquer that hill. And so what you're looking for is you're looking to pay attention where the hills are along a given route, as well as the gradient of the hill, and it can help you both prepare physically and mentally for a ride to come. What does that mean, the grade of the hill? Well, unless you have a ride with GPS or a Strava or something like that, you're probably not going to really know what those grades are. I highly encourage you to use apps like that because they really, really make a big difference. And it's important that you see what you have coming up in front of you. So very, 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 very important. The other thing is that what you're going to find a lot of times is that steeper hills require more muscular strength than cardiovascular fitness. That's what some people say. This was from a coach at Peak Coaching Group. Yeah, power to strength ratio makes a huge difference. I will say that. When I was climbing my best, and I am not climbing my best at all right now, but when I was climbing my best, it was because I was a very, very thin and muscular rider. I was young and I had a lot of muscle structure on me, and most of my body was pure muscle and bone. So it was just a matter of being able to carry that high strength to weight ratio and carry it up and over the hills with ease. Things have changed over the years. I'm still fighting with a bit of my pharmaceutical nightmare that I'm dealing with a medication that I had been taking to control my cholesterol, and it's out of control right now. But we're getting better. We're going to get better. We got to ride 20 miles this weekend with my buddy Gabe. So anyway, you might find that there's like certain hills out there, and like this past weekend I rode primarily on the rail trail because I wanted to keep it as flat as I could, and that's the only thing we have in this area is flat. So you're talking about a 1-2% rise, or what we also call a false flat, and you can pretty much complete it with most of the gearing on your bike. 3-4%, this is a relatively gradual hill, and it's also not super steep, but it's there. And then 5-8%, now it's starting to get hard. The grade requires a degree of cardiovascular fitness or muscular strength to climb. 9-12%, very hard. Yeah, anytime you go over double digits, you're looking at some pretty tough climbing here. And it's going to require you to gear it down, try to get the gearing down so you can be able to go up the extreme efforts. And then 13% and more is extremely hard. And you want to shift into your easiest gear, and you want to take it as slow as you need to. And that's basically the way it works. If you, there's some things to do. I talk about this a lot when I'm out riding with people, and I explain it in the best way I can. And that is that the day that you decide that you are going to mash your way up the hill, in other words, attack the bottom of that hill and really go for it, is the day that you learn how to ride backwards up a hill. It doesn't work. You really, really want to conserve that strength, and you want to conserve that cardiovascular effort until you get nearer to the top of the hill rather than at the bottom of the hill. There's a really good reason for this, and it is specifically that when you get to a point where you've gone over 80% of your aerobic capacity and you're going into what we call the anaerobic phase of your workout or your climb, you're no longer going to be able to come out of that. So once you get there, it's really, really hard to bring your heart rate and your breathing back down. So you want to reserve that until you get closer to the top of the hill rather than doing it at the bottom of the hill. And it's a common mistake. I see people make it all the time. And they are generally passed by people like me, maybe a more experienced rider, or others that are more experienced, and they look at us and they shake their heads and go, "How do you climb like that? I just don't get it. You just like passed me like I was standing still." There's a reason. It's because I know how to do it. And so the key is you never, I repeat, never, 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 okay, really, really important, unless it's something that's awfully short, never attack the bottom of a hill. It will only catch up to you. You only attack the hill, and I'm not talking about attacking other riders when you're out riding. I'm talking about you personally on your bike versus the terrain in front of you. You only attack when you can conceivably see the top is in sight. And that is when you want to unload it and let it go. You'll get stronger from this. You'll actually, if you're not a really great sprinter, Let's say, you know, you have a hard time sprinting against maybe one of your friends for a town line sign, or maybe you're doing some bicycle racing and you're looking for, you know, a win or some extra points. This will improve that. It really will. And when you make that move to really, really put it out in the last, let's say, 25% of the hill, and that, again, is going to become a judgment thing. You're going to have to figure this out. This takes practice. It takes a lot of practice. It takes continually going out and probably looking at the same hill each time to figure out where that point is. I like to find places that are relatively close to my house, and I go out, and in reference, I'll use either a telephone pole or a mailbox as the reference point for the, you know, 25% left to go. And then I'll launch my personal attack at that time on the hill. And that is a great way to do it, to have something that's fairly cut and dry, that's in front of you each time, and you know where that point is on that hill. But if you're riding up to that point and you've already burnt the matches, as we say, you're going to have a really hard time getting over the last 25% of the hill. That's not a very enjoyable way to ride your bike. I tend to like to feel that when I get off of my bike after a nice ride, that I like to feel powerful. I feel like I really got something really positive and powerful out of that. And that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. You do not attack the bottom of the hill, only attack the top of the hill. Fran calls it riding in three-quarter time, three-quarters of the way up the hill. That's what she calls it. And that's a good reference. It's a good way to think about it. So, yeah, how do you climb the hill? That's how you climb the hill. Also, if you're looking to climb hills and you're looking to get better at it, all right, super, super helpful to go out and take a day out of your week. I would say an hour or less on your workout, should you be using it for training, and do some hill repeats. So find that specific hill, that one that works the best for you, depending on what kind of hill climbing you're training for. Around here, we have nothing but punchy little climbs. They're always there. They're anywhere from 6 to 12% wherever you go, it seems. Rarely do you find something that's a 2 or 3% climb, or even a 6% climb that you can hang out on for a while and just, you know, put in the hard, steady work. They're tough to find around here. This is New England. This is true New England out here in northeastern Connecticut. And we have a lot of, like I said, punchy little climbs. So very often I'll be out on a ride and I'll see a little hill in front of me, and it doesn't look like it's that big. But by the time I get partway up it, I look down at my computer and I'm at 11%. It's not uncommon, not uncommon at all. To ride my bicycle up to the community center where I teach my fitness classes in the morning, I often am encountering anything from an 11 to 13% climb that I've got to get over in order to get there. Yeah, there's other stuff after that, which is not as bad, but the tricky ones are the ones that are really, really steep at the bottom. So you're kind of diving into it, but trying not to dive into it. And then as you get over that steep part, let's say you get over the 12 or 13% part, and now you've still got another 7% climb in front of you, it's hard to get into the rhythm on the 7% climb. So you do have to be super, super careful about not attacking the bottom of the hill, because it will come back and haunt you. And it's just not a pleasant way to ride your bike. And I see a lot of people doing this. This is not uncommon. So hopefully some of these tips that I give you on the show and at other times, maybe if you're out for a ride with me, hopefully some of these tips will settle in and you'll figure it out. And you'll get stronger because of it, because it'll allow you to use that physical strength that you might be developing or are working on or have worked on to your best advantage. And the best advantage for it is not at the bottom, it's at the top. You are going to probably go anaerobic when you go to the top of the hill, when you're attacking the top of the hill. But the key point here, and the most important part about this, is once you get over that hill, once you have actually brought yourself over the top and there's less pressure on your legs and less need to perform on the bicycle, you get to spin the legs out, just let them wind out, okay? And let your heart rate come back down because you're not putting out that hard effort. So you allow your cardiovascular system to recover from the hill that you're climbing. I read a piece too, I think it was from Tom Danielson. This is a quote from Tom about climbing hills. And he talked about people tend to get out of the saddle and they tend to pound on the pedals. And he said, instead, you want to use your weight and you want to throw your weight from side to side and use your body weight to help you accelerate up and over the hill when out of the saddle. You can't do that in the saddle, but you can do that out of the saddle. So you're actually utilizing not just your strength, but also the body weight that you have in order to get into a rhythm. That, again, takes practice. And the more you practice it, the better you get at it. And there you go. And the next thing you know, you're going out and you're looking for hills to ride on instead of looking for hills to avoid. I used to look for the hills to ride on. Now I look more, as I've gotten older, I look for the hills to avoid. I think that's just kind of, we'll either call it a maturity or a loss of fitness over the years. But anyway, that's what I've got for hill climbing for today. And I thought you guys might find that to be interesting. So what else do we have here on this? Okay, we're going to go back into content here and we're going to talk about that Facebook teaser. And it was the numeral. So it was basically the numeral 6 and 956. All right. So the numeral 6 was 6 victories for Tadej Pogačar in the Giro. Hello. So I can get my 6s to fit into my screen here. So yeah, he won 6 stages. He won 6 stages in the Giro this year, record-breaking amount. There are other riders who have been there. There are other riders who have won by more time than 9 minutes and 56 seconds. But 9 minutes and 56 seconds is a very, very big gap to have on your competition. I think the one that got me the most was the final stage that he won, which was stage 20. It was in the Dolomites. The Dolomites, by the way, were miserable this year. Cold, rainy, just lots of trouble in the Dolomites. But only the hardiest of the hardy were the ones that made it through there. It was really, really a tough place. But he won the Giro by the largest margin in 59 years. And a little over a month will begin his bid to become the first cyclist since 1998 to win the Giro and the Tour de France in the same year. And yes, the word is he's going for that. He said this was the big goal for the first part of his season. Now, finally, I have a bit of rest before the second part, which could be the more important part, he said. We'll see. Quote unquote, Tadej Pogačar. He's a 25-year-old rider from Slovenia. He dominated the 3-week event in Italy, considered by many the second most prestigious race after the Tour de France. I personally think it's number one, but that's just me. That's my opinion. I have loved the Giro. The Tour of Italy is truly my favorite of all the races. There's just so many things that can or cannot happen in the Giro that are different than the Tour de France that I just find it to be more intriguing. The climbs are definitely more intriguing. The road conditions are more intriguing. The weather can be crazy. It's just that time of year that it's still early. And, you know, we saw a couple of different stages in that race where there was snow on the side of the road. So it's not unusual to see that. And we're talking May here. We're talking May in Italy. Yeah. Yeah. Well, guess what? When you get to elevation, there's still snow. So anyway, he won six stages and included a time trial in four mountain stages. The amazing thing about it really was that when he decides to go, and he had a great team working for him, and there's also some talk about this, we'll get to that in a minute, about, well, nobody else showed up. Well, that's not really true, but anyway, there were other definite strong riders there, strong teams there. But yeah, everybody kind of points their direction and saves it for the Tour de France. I will admit that. But he still won by almost 10 minutes. And he led the race from day two and never, ever lost the pink jersey. He kept it the whole way, which is really pretty amazing when you look at it. Because a lot of times there'll be like a jersey change here and there. You know, it'll be a big time trial. Somebody ends up cleaning off a better time. And then you have to exchange the jersey. And, you know, things like that can happen. Or, you know, a mountain event where somebody just has an outstanding climb. I mean, there's so many things that can happen in these, you know, 21 days of racing. It's a lot of racing. So when he won the last stage that he won, which was the day before the ending stage, Tade crossed the line. He put his arms up in the air and, you know, as to celebrate the victory, had a really huge smile on his face. But the part I loved the most was he then proceeded to bow to the crowds. He was, in every interview I watched with Tade, he was very complimentary of the fans and how much support they gave him. Although on that last stage, he had a fan who decided to reach out and touch him, and he got pretty upset with that. That didn't look so good. I'm sure that somewhere along the line, someone will make a comment about that, and then he'll have to address that. But these guys are going really, really, really hard. And anything, any slight problem, like someone reaching out and pushing him or you know, altering his course in some way could lead to a crash, which could really cost him the race. And I know why he was upset. I get that. I mean, think about this years ago in the Tour de France when Eddie Merckx was so dominant. And he was a Belgian, and he was winning the French Tour, and one of the fans, the French fans, stepped out and punched him in the gut when he went by. I mean, which is completely uncalled for. There's no reason why that should have been done, and yet it was done, and Eddie had a rib or two broken on that and continued to go on and win the Tour de France. But Eddie is Eddie. Eddie is like a different... Tadej Pogačar is starting to show some signs. He's a pretty strong rider, and he's got a lot of determination, and he's still explosive. But then again, he's still just 25 years old. Remember, this is the guy that came out on his 20th year of life and won his very first Tour de France. All right? A day before his 21st birthday, he was on the podium with his hands up in the air, winning the Tour de France. The next year, he came back and did it again. So following that, there were a lot of things that happened. I think that that was about the point that the Jumbo-Visma team was really starting to, they were really starting to get their act together. And it was, they just kind of worked him over, and they actually exposed some of his inexperience and some of his youth. And, you know, if he gets better at that, and I think he was truly better at that in the Giro this year, we have a lot more to look forward to. So, good stuff. Second place finisher was Colombian Dani Martinez. Dani did really well, but he just could not even come close. So the margin of victory was the largest in a Grand Tour Giro di Italia, Tour de France, Vuelta a España since Laurent Fignon won in the 1984 Tour de France by 10 minutes and 32 seconds, and the largest at the Giro since Vittorio Ordoni won the 1965 edition by 11:26. And that's according to ProCyclingStats.com. He's the best I've ever raced with. I think I've raced with a lot of good guys, said Geraint Thomas at the 2018 Tour de France champion, who placed third at the Giro at age 38. Now, there's an outstanding story there. There's a few more outstanding stories. But anyway, he's just so versatile and aggressive all year round as well. In his Giro debut, Pogacar added his first Giro title to his wins at the Tour de France in 2020 and 2021. I already spoke about that. He was the runner-up at the Tour last 2 years behind Jonas Vingegaard of Denmark. So now Jonas is now recovering from he broke his wrist or collarbone? Maybe it was collarbone. So he's still recovering from that, but he's got a killer team behind him, so we'll see what happens. Now, I've heard promise that this team that Pogacar took to the UAE Emirates team that he is on, they are not running their top team. They did not run their top team at the Giro, and if they've got more money in the bank as far as that goes, this could be a very interesting Tour de France this year. That's all I'm saying is I see some big players coming in, and it's going to be very, very entertaining. So that's only a month away. So I know this is, for you bike racing fans, this is a big deal. This is classic good stuff. If you're not a bicycle racing fan and you're listening to this podcast, I apologize for the amount of time I spend on it, but I really do enjoy the sport. And if you start watching it, it's really easy to get hooked. That's all I can tell you. It's just really, really easy to get hooked. And if you're out riding your bike and you're out and doing your 1 hour ride that you do every day, or your 2 or 3 hour rides that you do 3 or 4 times a week, whatever it is, you get a real appreciation for the amount of quality that comes out of these riders. I mentioned earlier about 26 miles an hour average pace. I will also mention that by the Strava information that's out there on Pogacar, he was averaging about 93 RPMs for the entire tour, for the entire Giro. Just try to hold 93 RPMs on your next climb and see how long you last. That's all I can say. And this is his average. So I just want you to understand that's all ups, downs, all arounds, doesn't matter. 93 RPMs. Really, really impressive. The gearing that is available on the bikes right now, it really does allow for higher RPMs, but you only can hold higher RPMs with a really dynamic cardiovascular system. So it's entertaining, to say the least. It is very, very entertaining. So this, in a video that was published on May 7th, Vingegaard said that he hoped to race in the Tour. He can bid to join a select group of men to win 3 consecutive tours. Most recently was Chris Froome, Miguel Indurain, and Eddie Merckx. Okay. We don't know exactly how my shape and how my recovery will go, but I will do everything I can to get there in my top shape, Vingegaard said. So that's what's going on there. There's also, I know that there's talk that the Visma team is looking at the Criterium du Dauphiné, and I know that Sepp Kuss is one of their key riders for that. So we're going to see what kind of shape Sepp's in, because you know, you better be in good shape, Sepp, because man, oh man, here it comes. And the Criterium du Dauphiné is often a warm-up kind of teaser ride for team selection for the big teams to see who they're actually going to bring to the Tour de France. And, they're testing domestiques, they're testing GC riders, they're seeing, you know, who's got what and, what they can bring to the table for the Tour de France. Because the Tour de France is the most viewed one of all of them out there. It is the one that gains all of the respect of those, not just in the bike world, but outside of the bike world too. It's just really well known. So well advertised, well marketed, whatever you want to say, it's just a biggie. And it's been around for a real, real long time. So we'll see what happens. Tadej will be back. I can't wait to see what's going to happen there. That should be interesting. And now I'm going to move on. I'm going to move on to these guys right here. Best buddies. I am pointing for all you audiophile people. I am pointing to my chest and I'm wearing a very bright pink Best Buddies Domestique jersey. We all wear these jerseys. The domestiques are the helpers of the event. It is probably one of the best supported events I have ever done. There are signs everywhere, so the signage and the markings are really, really, really good. It is encouraged that you are riding two abreast at most down the road, and the domestiques, the folks like me that are wearing these jerseys, are there to help sort of police that, but just kind of keep some order into the ride, because we are riding from the south end of Boston all the way out to the Cape, and the roads are not necessarily quiet. So we have a large event where we're congesting a lot of roads, and if we can bring it down to two abreast, we can make it a lot easier for travel of all vehicles to get down the road. So that's kind of nice. We are encouraged as domestiques, if we are planning on riding, this is the fun thing I got last year when I was at the domestique meeting the night before. The word is, if you're planning on doing the 100-mile domestique ride, plan on riding 125 miles because you will be going back and forth. You will be going back. When you get done, you're going to go back out and you're going to ride in and encourage other riders that are finishing from the 50-mile ride or that are finishing from the 20-mile ride. Your job is to help support and aid people to the finish line. And like I said, really, really well-supported event. There's probably over 100 of us out there with these bright pink jerseys on. And it's just a really, really impressive show. It is, or was, last I knew, the largest one-day bicycle fundraiser in the United States. I know last year that there's a supermarket chain out of the Boston and Massachusetts area in general that flipped a check over at the start line for $750,000 to support this event. It's just an amazing thing. It's crazy to watch. It really is. We have special guests this year. I believe that the quarterback and one other person from the New England Patriots will be there this year. And Alberto Contador will be leading out the 100-mile ride this year. Yeah, Alberto Contador. I'm hoping to meet him the day before, because there is a meet and greet the day before, and I think a short ride that goes off the day before. Probably won't be doing that because I'm going to have my tandem, and that's going to be a little bit more challenging. But there's some logistic issues with the tandem. So anyway, I probably won't, but my friend Andre that's coming up with me, he's going to go and ride on the Contador ride because he thinks that will be just way cool. And that's just a special warm-up ride. So if I can corner him in some way, I'd love to get his autograph. Maybe I'll get him to sign the back of my Best Buddies shirt. That might be kind of nice. We'll see. But anyway, it's to meet someone of that level who has such world fame as a cyclist, to me, is a pretty big deal. That's a pretty big deal. So looking forward to meeting Alberto Contador this weekend. Watched him on Eurosport all the last 3 weeks. He's a big commentator for Spanish television, so he spends a lot of time behind a microphone, and he's a good sports commentator. So anyway, now I get to see him not just on the TV, I get to see him live. It's kind of cool. So I'm psyched. I'm really psyched about the Best Buddies. I love the Best Buddies. They're just such a fun group. It's a great event. I think you can still sign up for this ride if you want to. And you can just go online to bestbuddieschallenge.org and you will find them. And this is the Best Buddies Challenge Hyannis Port. So that's the big thing you want to be looking at. 25 years now. And it's just, again, it's just a very, very cool ride. A lot of fun, extremely well organized. And I'll just give you a general overview here. The 100-mile start is at the JFK Library, and it starts at 7 a.m. There's a 55-mile start that starts at 9:30 a.m., a 20-mile start at 10:30 a.m., which is where I'll be starting, and then there's a 5K run-walk that starts at 9:30 a.m., And so we are going to be leaving, Gabe and I are going to be leaving from the CVS Pharmacy rest stop number 5 in Sandwich, Massachusetts. And so we'll be actually out on the Cape. And then we are going to finish at Craigville Beach, which is really, really cool. I'm just so excited. It's great. The total elevation gain for the entire route, which is 103.3 miles, is 5,188 feet, which by my standards, as we ride out here, is pretty flat. And that's not flat. It's not flat at all. But anyway, that's what it is. So anyway, this is it's just a great ride, and it's just supporting so many good things, and it's very, very exciting. I can't wait to do it. So there are other major sponsors here. The Shaw Star Market Foundation were really, really the big donor last year, but Jersey Mike's is there, and TJX is also going to be part of the sponsorship. So there's some big money that comes into this thing, and it's super helpful. And then, of course, there's the riders like me and others that are also donating money to the cause. So pretty cool stuff anyway. And let's see, what else do I have here? And their mission impact here, they have 3,563 chapters, 128,801 participants. They've impacted 1,288,010, and they're in 50 states and 45 countries. So pretty cool stuff. Totally, totally cool stuff. And it's just a nice event. It's a huge party afterwards. There's no question about that. We'll be going to a pre ride dinner that is available to those of us who are volunteering as domestiques the night before. And so that's kind of a cool thing. And that's right after the 4 to 7 p.m. packet pickup at the JFK Library. So if you're interested, this is kind of a fun thing. And I just really, I'm very, very excited by it. The cool thing is that the finish line opens up at 12 p.m. There's lots of showers there, massages, fuel and recovery tent opens. There are finish line shuttles begin to make loops back to the official Hyannisport Ride Hotel There is, from between 1 and 6 p.m., there is a lobster clam bake hosted by Anthony Shriver with a private concert by Don Felder, formerly of the Eagles. At 4:30 p.m., there's an early shuttle, which brings you back to your start lines if you want to get back to where you may have parked your car or whatever you want to do there. And then the clam bake closes down at 6 p.m. The party ends at that point, and off we go. And that's it. And so anyway, it's just a cool event. That's all I can say. It's extremely, extremely well organized. And that is, that's what I'm doing this weekend. What are you doing this weekend? Hopefully you'll find yourself a nice event to do, or maybe you'll decide to come out and check this out and ride in your very first Best Buddies Challenge, because it's really, really, really fun. There's a lot of sponsorship here. Again, if you go to the website, you're going to see so much, you know, rider support, Best Buddies staff, that's people like me and volunteers that are able to assist you along the course. If it says here, our team of domestiques and bicycle medics will ride with you on the course wearing bright pink jerseys and or red medic jerseys to provide immediate rider support on the road. So we have that. We have SAG support. We have also, there are some PACE groups. So the ride support program for the 100-mile line rides allows riders to join PACE groups led by domestique PACE leaders. And they'll have it all indicated at the beginning which rider group of domestiques is going at which pace. So if you have something that works out best for you, they send people off at 30-second intervals so as not to be too confusing, and you get to go out and you get to ride with a group that fits your particular pace. And that's a cool thing. And there's also a women's group finished. There's a women's group too. There's all sorts of ways to make this thing super helpful and right. And they really do say ride tight and right. So riders must be no more than two abreast the absence of the bike lane. We advise riders to stay in single file, especially on climbs and heavy traffic, staying as far to the right as feasible. Aside from making a left turn, riders should never cross the center line. So, and listen to your state and local police and the domestiques. That's why we're there. We're there to help you, to support you, and to hopefully give you a pleasant experience on the ride. So, cool, cool, cool stuff. And that's it. That's what we got. That's what we got. Can't wait. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. Alberto Contador is going to be there. Whew, wow, cool stuff. Great rides, good times. So anyway, let's see, what else do we have on the Bicycle Talk file here for today? The Chiros all over. Yeah, it's still here. And I'm going to mention this. I mentioned it last week, and I'll mention it again in the "And We're Not Dead Yet" department. We're going to talk about Geraint Thomas, third overall. Jeez, 38 years old, third overall. Pretty darn amazing performance by Geraint Thomas. And then how about Julian Alaphilippe? What a fun rider he is to watch. He's always been entertaining. The man can descend and he can corner better than almost any pro rider I've seen over the years. He's just fabulous at it. And he's just got these explosive attacks on climbs. And, you know, everyone was talking earlier in the year, maybe even last year, about, you know, maybe it's time for Alaphilippe to retire. He's kind of washed up. And then he goes out and wins the stage in the Giro d'Italia. There you go. That's it. And it was in a spectacular way, an early attack. He went really early and just a heroic and classic performance. Very, very cool. Nairo Quintana. Tip of the cycling cap to him, too. If it weren't for Tadej Pogačar, he would have also won a stage. But Tadej decided at the and of his reign out there in the front and where he was climbing so well that Tadej decided to show him what it's like to be 10 years younger. And, well, I don't know if, yeah, it's probably pretty close. I don't know. Nairo's probably in his early 30s now, and Tadej is 25, but boy, he just like blasted by him like he was standing still. But still, it was nice to see Nairo Quintana back out there, the Colombian that everyone has been watching over the years. He's got a great history behind him in bike racing, and the Colombians must have been out of their minds when he was climbing like that and had left everyone behind in the Giro. So anyway, those are highlights, and I think that it's really, really cool that that we had this such an interesting Giro this year. And yeah, I know that the controversy is, the talk is, well, where were the other teams? Well, there were still other teams there. By the way, if you happen to watch yesterday, the final stage, is always turns into the same thing. It's kind of a parade into Rome, and then there is a criterium style finish, and it gets really fast, and the lead out trains develop, and the sprinters work their way up and down and all around. And then one of the sprinters had a mechanical with 9K to go, which was not good. And that guy, that poor guy, he had to wait for his team car because his team was not the first team. The way the team, they line up the team cars by the position of their riders that are in the actual, that are in the peloton. So obviously UAE Emirates has, they've got the front team car, and this guy's team car was quite a ways back. So it took a little while for them to get to him to be able to repair I think he needed a front wheel or something. He had flatted out or something. And so then now he has to time trial at 33 miles an hour, I think is what they were going, 31 or 33 miles an hour. They're going really fast, over 50K. And they, he had to just work his way back up, and we figured, well, that's it. And he was one of the top sprinters. He was actually touted to be the winner of that race, top contender for the winner, to be the winner of that race. He was second. He caught him, and he had an outstanding sprint at the end, but you could tell he just didn't have quite the legs that he would have had if he had not flatted out and had to time trial back onto a 33-mile-an-hour pace. So just classic great stuff. That's all I can say. Bike racing, yes. I'll put it away for maybe a week or two here, but then, you know, here comes more, and there's going to be a lot more bike racing coming up for sure. And there'll be more excitement down the line. So this brings me to a point where I'm actually going to go right on into events from here. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the things that you still can do as May is Bike Month. And the big one I would like to really push, if you live in this Connecticut area or somewhere near the Connecticut area, if you haven't been to the annual Bicycles on Main in Old Wethersfield, it's just cool. It's just a cool thing. And you'll be super happy when you do it. I had a few people that went to it recently that said, you know, I took your advice and I went to the Bicycles on Main. And they said, that is definitely a very interesting and cool experience. It's a family event because there's lots of different bicycles out there. It's very entertaining. It really is. And you're in Old Wethersfield, and Old Wethersfield's pretty quiet as far as traffic goes. And being the fact that it is the big annual Bicycles on Main, people are very respectful of the cyclists when they're riding through. So go there with the idea that you're just going to tool around the neighborhood and check it out, because it's cool. And it's definitely a very special thing. Obviously, the Best Buddies ride is coming up this weekend, Friday, May 31st, for early packet pickup, and day of event is June 1st. And next on my list here, I will continue to promote the MADE Festival, which is a handmade bicycle festival. First stop is in Australia, and June 28th to the 29th, and then in Portland, Oregon, August 23rd through the 25th. Domestique events, these guys actually are part of that. That's a long, twisted little story, but it is what it is. They've got a great event coming up in Lime Rock Park this fall for you gravel riders. Join us for the Ride of the East. Okay, Gilson's House Museum in Willimantic, Connecticut, June 8th. And explore the scenic airline trail in East Coast Greenway Alliance Trust for Public Land. So it's a couple of different out and back rides on the airline trail, 48 mile and an 18 mile. I'll give you a heads up on that. That is definitely not for a road bike. The trails are a little rough in spots because we had so much winter damage. But anyway, it's still a cool thing, and it's sponsored by the Gilson House and the Windham Region Chamber of Commerce. The 2024 Steeplechase Ride Walk, Saturday, August 17th. Road rides include 20, 35, and 62 miles. A 5-mile fundraising walk. In addition to last year's 18-mile gravel ride, there will be an additional 40-mile gravel route available. The gravel route is spectacular. It is 90% or more dirt roads and trails. So it's a true gravel ride. It's very cool. And I hope to see a lot of people there because we've had a lot of interest in this particular ride. I'm on the Steeplechase committee, so I know a lot about this. Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series is coming this fall. Stay tuned. We're going to have a fun, exciting regional cyclocross series based out of some of the Connecticut races from past years. And we, of course, being the Mansfield Hall Cyclocross, are definitely involved in that. And we're welcoming racers of all backgrounds, genders, races, ethnicities, nationalities, religions, incomes, and abilities. Yeah, it's completely, it's a cool cross race. It's just a bunch of cross races this fall. And a lot of really cool old time promoters like this guy and others that are involved in this too. So it's very, very cool. Finishing points. What you doing this weekend? It's Memorial Day weekend right now. Hopefully you're out riding your bike and you can listen to this a little bit later on if you want to. Thinking about the Best Buddies ride? Thinking about the Steeplechase bike tour? Next week I will highlight the Quiet Corner bike ride, bike event by the Thread City Cyclers. So coming soon. That's your teaser for next week. We'll chat a little bit more about it again. So, 2024, you're going to ride more miles, ride your commute to work and around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying the rides you take more by just stopping and smelling the roses. By the way, the wild roses are next. I will say it again, this will not be my last time. You get loud, get active, our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and the lack of places to safely ride your bike and join the revolution of change. Hey, take a day. Park the car or truck, ride your bicycle instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment below, or you can send an email to bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to Bicycle Talk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. This is Pedlin and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It just might save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks so much for listening. See you next week. Get it!